Mr. Singer, reel two.
Yes. Well, going back to this time, I have to start again with my family. I was, at the time, as I mentioned before, on this work in, on the land in Moravia, but the Germans eventually closed all even this purpose of work of the Jewish community. They restricted, we were already forced somehow, at this time somehow we were already wearing our this yellow
star.
And so I returned home, and one day when my father was actually still in charge of this newspaper, which was called the Yiddish Nachrichtenblatt, came home and he said that, yeah, I have to go back again a little bit. They this time started already the first transport of Jews to the east, into this concentration camp, or rather, better to say, at that time, into the Polish ghetto of Witzmannstadt Lodz. And that was the most critical time I remember for our family and for all our friends. And, because when we heard that the first 1,000 of Jewish people in Prague had to be assembled in a place where they are actually going to be sent somewhere to the east into an unknown place, we were really starting somehow to, not to panic, but to realize that now the worst has come. And what has happened? The first transport went away. Nobody knew where there was the Germans. I remember only that we were not aware where they are going. But when the second transport was assembled in this place where from where they were transported to the east, my father was taken to the SS headquarters in Prague and was told that inside of this assembling place of those for the transport, they caught somebody with a letter which was addressed to him, where this person was talking about how they were handled and what is happening inside this assembly place. And he was accused that he actually asked the person to write a letter to him in order perhaps to be able to see what's happening there, and that he might be able to do something or to prevent something or whatever it was. Later on, when I was talking to my father about it, he said he never really intended, or he never asked anybody to write him a letter. But what has happened afterwards, they said the letter was there, they found it, and they are not going to argue with him whether he actually asked for this letter to be sent to him or whether it was just action from this person. So they put us immediately, without any preparation, into the exile, into the self-transport, which was not even a week to go. So I came home this one day, and my father came home, and he said, "We have to pack our bits and pieces, and we'll be transported to somewhere to the east." And eventually, I mean, we found ourselves in Lodz in Liechtenstein. There was an enormous, enormous gap.
Can you put a date on this? Is it possible?
Oh, yes, it was at the end of October 1941.
How much privation had the family suffered before October 1941?
Well, I must say we personally haven't suffered so much because I still was, if I'm talking personally of myself, I still had so many good friends around which were still not even afraid to talk to us, although it wasn't allowed anymore to communicate with us. We were actually forced only to live within our people, segregated by that we had to wear this sign here. But I wasn't actually suffering till that. I still lived a life without a lot of suffering. There were only the thought, what is going to happen, what are we are going to, what is now going to happen.
What were conditions like on the journey to Łódź?
On the journey to Łódź, it was the condition on this journey, they were still relatively human. I have to say, relatively human. I can say this looking backwards now because I experienced then another journey which was just uncomparable, which was the journey from Łódź to Auschwitz, to Birkenau, Auschwitz-Birkenau. That was just uncomparable. We were still sitting in a normal train where it was a very old, shabby train, but we were sitting in, like if you would have traveled from one town to another. It was a long journey because we were always sitting somewhere in the station for hours before the train was going further, because the distance was not so far. I went from Prague to Łódź at the time. I don't know, it was 300 kilometers or something like that, so it wasn't far, but it was a very long journey for us, because we didn't know where we are going and what we are going to face there. We were allowed to take with us so-called 50 kilos of I think it was 50 kilos, I'm not sure, of
belongings.
And that was all what we had or what we thought that we have to survive in the future time. And so that was still a journey, as I recollect, a relatively human way of a journey.
Apart from you and your father, who else traveled?
Well, with us was at the time living a sister of my father also, which was married to a German Jewish man, but he was already taken somewhere away when she was living in Friedeck at the time, still where we originally lived, and from there they took a lot of men to so-called work somewhere into Germany, and he never returned, that he vanished somewhere there. So my father took his sister to us, and then there was also on this journey my mother and my sister.
Where did you go to in the Łódź ghetto?
Well, in the Łódź ghetto, we actually finished in this existing ghetto there, where already at the time it was established in a very small part of previous Łódź town, surrounding with high fence and with their own such a government, which the Germans established inside there. And eventually, we were housed in such provisional flats or houses, which were actually there, still empty or emptied for new arrivals. Because the space was limited, so they either had to move out some people and squeeze them inside some other flats or smaller flats or whatever to make some free space for those people who were still arriving. After us, from Prague, there arrived another two transport after the third transport, so altogether approximately 5,000 people, five transport of about 1,000 people. If, may I stop you for a moment, if you can? Yes. So we were living here, we were actually given such a flat where my family was living. It was on the exact outskirts on this ghetto. Underneath of our windows was actually running the fence of the ghetto, and we were looking into the Polish side of the Lodz town. So we could see all the time this German patrols patrolling along the fence. And because, going back again to that what has happened to my family, so my father, because he was actually somehow the only man who was there amongst those 5,000 Czech people in this strange surrounding, become such a leader of them. And he was recognized by the men who were running the inside of this ghetto, the organization which was created by the Germans to run actually the factories, because there were already factories which were working with such slave labor there. And there was an enormous hierarchy already built up there during those years or months. I don't know. I don't know when Germans actually established this ghetto, but it must be already a year or two before that. And so there was already an organization there. And my father then was recognized as the leader of that. And because he was a journalist, he was given a job from the so-called Älteste der Juden, which means the oldest of Jewish establishment there, to establish an archive, and he should write about all this daily happening there.
This was German initiated, or initiated by the elders?
By the elders, yes. And eventually kept with the knowledge of the Germans to put such a chronicle of that. Logically, it was expected again, it wouldn't be anything written, it would be only a matter of facts, with perhaps a few comments, or perhaps a few associated articles about something, but not criticism or anything. That is something which I could recollect now when I'm looking on the book. So that was something which kept us alive in this ghetto. My father had a relatively good job actually there, because there was a hierarchy, and according to the hierarchy, you've got something to eat. The amount of food was regarded to that, which was very unjust. Because of that, he was able to get some vouchers for bread, for additional breads, which he distributed to those worst of Czech people there who were dying and of this is actually, if people are talking about hunger, they don't know what hunger really is. But there was so little to eat that people were actually, you could see walking in the street, people who were swollen, you know, and they were dying in the street. So any little piece of bread you had there, more than the normal Russian was actually, was able to keep somebody alive or not. So, as I said, my father at the time was able to get some additional bread and get this thing was distributed to this Czech population, which was dying very rapidly. And because there this incredible change in the condition, in the living style, was so tragic that a lot of people couldn't bear it. They committed suicides, running towards the fence or jumping down from the higher floors of the buildings. So it was just, that was the first at the time. If I'm not regarding what actually has happened afterwards, which was another episode.
Were all the Czech Jews together in the large ghetto?
No, they were dispersed in the whole ghetto. According to that, where there was any space able to organize within this organization. And at the time, my father got me a job in the so-called electricity department. I have to say, one of those things which we were allowed to take with us is the luggage into the ghetto. My father said I should take with me a little toolkit with me, which was a very organized toolkit. I had my voltmeter there, really most important things, although I didn't know whether I'm going to need this, some screwdrivers, pliers, and things like that, the most important. So I had this there. And so I could start actually as an electrician, at least not an electronic engineer there, because there are not allowed any electronic instruments or radios or whatever in this ghetto to possess, actually. And so I had this job as an electrician, and then my situation has improved through my father's position there, that I've got even a job as an electrician in the bakeries there. There were about five bakeries. There was an enormous population there, but I believe about 200,000 people left to imagine. 200,000 people squeezed together in an enormously small space.
So you were doing repairs to the supply system?
To the supply system in the bakeries, which gave me additional food supply, because although I was not allowed to carry anything out, but I could eat inside the bakeries, whatever I needed for myself. So that kept me relatively totally out of the hunger, which was the most terrible thing there. And all the rations which we actually had there, I didn't need to consume that. It was even a little bit more left for the rest of the family. So, I was quite in a very, very good position there, and compared to the others. And there, in this ghetto, then we survived incredible times. Terrible times where the Germans just, without any announcement, took actions like they came in this one morning with 20 big lorries and started to to assemble house by house all old people and old children, and they threw them on the lorries, and they took them out of the gate. And we knew now, you know, we knew afterwards that they were going into those elimination camps, like Chełmno and Majdanek, and all those were, they were actually not concentration camps, but there were those final stages where they were just promoted and gassed. So we actually, all the time this has happened, we never knew who is going to be the victim at that day, or who is going to vanish, or to be lost.
But you knew they were going to be killed?
Yes. Where they threw those people, really, eventually, they couldn't actually, on themselves, lift themselves into the lorry. So we've seen, I personally have seen, how they were throwing children into the lorry, small ones. It was one of those terrible things. So we knew that those were going into the final journey. But there were also different transports. They were assembled in the prison, in the inside prison. There was a prison also in the ghetto. There was a ghetto police. There was a ghetto, everything like in a normal life. The organization was very, there were so-called lawyers, there were ghetto, how is it called? Law, where people were sentenced to prison. And
courts.
There were courts there, and they were sentenced to prison to a certain time, and but they never lived so long there, because they always came from the Germans' order. They had to assemble 500 people, or they were going for some work outside the ghetto into Częstochowa, or I remember some names they mentioned they will go for work. They mostly were men. And so also on this ground, there were people going out of the ghetto, and as far as I remember, none of them returned into the ghetto back. They all vanished somehow. And at that time, the population was rapidly diminishing, because there were not any transports anymore coming into the ghetto. They were only going out, or people were dying, actually.
Later on, in Warsaw, there was the famous Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Was there any kind of organization that you knew of in Lodz?
No, there were nothing. Further on, out of some book and researches which I read only after the war, I found out that there was also an organization there which tried to do something like that, but they didn't succeed. They were not able to succeed in that. Because the ghetto actually was liquidated in a different way than the ghetto in Warsaw. It was liquidated in 1944. The Germans suddenly somehow decided it's going to be finished. I think it was because they reached enormous liquidating capacity in all those finishing camps in Poland and all that. And then also Auschwitz was only such a camp where people were actually selected first and then again transported into different camps in Germany and so on. They suddenly decided to liquidate the ghetto, and we were in daily, several daily transports, transported into Auschwitz-Birkenau.
When did you leave the camp, the ghetto, do you think?
Well, it was in 1944. I'm now a little bit confused when it was, but it was, I think, in the spring of 1944. We were one of those transports which going to put, I mean, the whole family of us, we were still all alive, all five of us were alive, because we were lucky having enough food. There were hardly any family left there where they wouldn't have suffered the loss of somebody during this short few years there.
You said the journey was terrible.
That was the most. That was just an incomparable journey. We were put, I mean, I believe about nobody counted them. We were put 200 people in one wagon. There were not any more normal wagons. There were only wagons like for transporting cattle transport. We were put 200, I think it was about 200 people, pressed into this one wagon. And there was nothing else there than such a big, I don't know, how, container in the corner for experiments. There amongst those people who were already put into this, pressed actually like sardines into this wagons, and some people were already weak, very weak. They couldn't stand anymore, so there were really people sitting one on each other. You hardly could step somewhere. It was just impossible. And there we were closed. The only thing I don't know, there is only that there are such little windows which are not able to open, but such tiny small windows in those cafe wagons with some
wire
from outside, and that was the only way. But you couldn't actually reach it, you had to step on somebody else in order to reach this little tiny window. So it was the only place where you could see. After we kept in this for 3 days, I think we were there in this wagon. A lot of people still. There was such a short journey again, but we were waiting on some side rails somewhere in some stations, and there were dead people. We were actually people were dying in this short time there. Not having any food and this boat, the container was already full, and then it was over. And it was